Thank you. Be seated. Justice O'Neill is not sitting in either of these cases. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioners, and you can explain to us how things are there.
May it please the court, Mr. Ronnie Keister and Mr. Frank Sanders will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Keister will open with the first 10 minutes, and Mr. Keister will present the rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Ron Keister. I'm the Assistant Attorney General. I'm here today representing the petitioners in the Demetria Clark case, the University of Houston, Sergeant John Williams, and Officer Matthew Stewart. Our position here today, Your Honors, is that the Court of Appeals has misapplied this court's holding in Waywitz versus Montgomery, and has essentially created a litmus test for what the determination of good faith is to be in official immunity cases in the court of appeal. The petitioners assert that Waywitz versus Montgomery clearly states and was clearly intended to apply in the context of an emergency response scenario, as opposed to a pursuit case, which Chambers is specifically directed towards. And it is our position, Your Honors, that by doing this, the Court of Appeals misapplied Waywitz and created a standard that is close to impossible for police officers to meet when they're attempting to prove good faith and for their official immunity defense. The distinctions between the emergency response case
is there anything in the Court of Appeals opinion that could not, that you could not meet simply by filing another longer affidavit?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, there is. I'll take that back. I guess there's always a possibility that something could be said that could in some way address the questions or the criteria in Waywitz. But do those facts, are you creating facts to fit that criteria is the question.
Well, what about their ruling on the expert affidavits, that they were conclusory, so therefore they're not summary judgment evidence? And the reason why is because they didn't base the conclusion on any facts. Didn't you go back and just get the expert to redo his affidavit, put the facts, and assume they come out with the same conclusion that there was good faith, that you'd have a valid affidavit and support for your position?
Assuming, Your Honor, that that is all that is being done here, is that we're attempting to get an expert witness to come in and spit out some facts.
No, I'm not saying that. They said that what he said was a conclusion. And the reason why was it wasn't supported by a review of the facts that led that expert to that conclusion, which seems to me is a correctable situation. Now, I guess, of course, if your expert can't come out with that conclusion that's favorable to your side once they apply the facts, then you still don't have an affidavit, which gets back to the question that the chief asked.
Let me back up a little bit, Your Honor. There were four separate affidavits presented in the summary judgment case. And that is all the evidence that was presented to the trial court. What were those four affidavits? Officer Stewart provided his affidavit. Sergeant Williams provided his. Then we had Assistant Chief Simpa provide an affidavit, which is probably closer to an expert affidavit than Officer Williams, Sergeant Williams, and Officer Stewart. Our position is you can take Simpa's affidavit out completely if you agree with the Court of Appeals analysis, and I do not agree with that, but if you agree with our analysis, that Assistant Chief Simpa's affidavit is conclusory. You can take it completely out of this case, and the affidavits of Officer Stewart and Sergeant Williams are still sufficient to prove good faith under the Chambers standard. So, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
Well, I understand that. So that you are you arguing that, therefore, those two officers who are parties are experts in their own right, and so their conclusions on the facts they recite should support what they said, which puts the plaintiff to a fact question situation.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Mr. Keister, if you concede that merely by redrawing the affidavits you can satisfy what the CA said, then this is probably not a very significant case and the court should not worry about it. But your argument has been that by doing what the CA has done, they've made it nearly impossible for the police officers to get an official immunity summary judgment because of their standards. So I'm kind of interested now where we are. Do you agree that just merely redrawing your affidavits will do it, or has the CA set up a standard that makes it nearly impossible for police officers to get summary judgment on official immunity because of what they require the police officers to have to say?
I do not believe that police officers in a pursuit case should be required to comply with the criteria that way was established in the emergency response case.
And what criteria is that?
That the affidavits, the Court of Appeals took line by line the Waywood's criteria, which is really only suggested criteria. They basically said that the affidavits must show, for the need aspect, they must show that the officer's immediate presence was immediately necessary, in this case, to apprehend the suspect, who was also a co-defendant in this case. They say we met that standard. However, then they go with the next two criteria, suggested criteria from Waitress, and they say that neither affidavit discusses the seriousness of the assault that Thomas allegedly committed, the suspect. And then they say that the police officer did not discuss what alternative causes of action, if any, were available to apprehend the suspect. Our position is that those criteria, simply those two criteria, do not apply under the facts of this case. That what the officers were faced with was a scenario that occurred in 4 to 5 minutes from beginning to end. From the time that this fight began on campus and that the foot patrol officers intervened to the time that the suspect Thomas assaulted the police officers, to the time that he drove away, to the time that he disregarded Sergeant Williams' patrol vehicle and emergency signals fled from him, from the time that he sped past Officer Stewart's vehicle at 90 miles per hour in a 35-mile per speed zone. All of this occurred within 4 to 5 minutes' time. And what essentially the Court of Appeals is saying is that the officers had to be sitting there thinking about, or in essence going back and saying, wait, let's start from the beginning. Somebody tell me what suspect Thomas did. Even though he's passing me at 90 miles an hour in a 35-mile-an-hour speed zone, I can't turn my lights on. I can't turn my siren on and go behind him. I've got to say, wait a minute, let me go back over here and talk to the officers and let's see. Now, who did he really slap? How serious was it? Officer Gonzalez, are you really hurt? You know, do we need to go after this guy? Well, the guy's going 90 miles an hour on the city street.
Well, the 90 miles an hour is relevant, but you agree that the affidavit ought to say that, shouldn't it? It should say, the chase would not be reasonable if he was only going 37 miles an hour, 35 miles an hour zone.
Right.
Just run down the street, run over people, trying to catch somebody that's going 2 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Right. Yes. Yes, Your Honor, that's the point I'm trying to make.
So from that officer's point of view, the risk, the necessity of chasing the guy from that he was looking at was because the guy was dangerous to the people around because he was driving so fast on the street. Isn't that
correct? Yes, Your Honor.
And you don't disagree that you should have to show that to demonstrate official immunity?
I do not disagree, and I believe that Officer Stewart's affidavit and Sergeant Williams' affidavit.
Well, but doesn't Waitowitz take into account what you've just been talking about with Justice Heck, because it talks about the officer's perception of the facts at the time of the event. And in your argument, the event is when this Thomas went by him at 90 miles an hour, and that's the event that leads to the conclusions that that particular officer is making on whether to chase or not, not what happened back at the campus.
That
so
is
why
her-
shouldn't that Wadewitz factor apply in this case?
The point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is it's the totality of all those circumstances that Sergeant Williams and Officer Stewart were immersed in. It was not just the beginning or the end. They had knowledge of all these circumstances, and all of this was an ongoing, evolving situation. Wadewitz, and what the Court of Appeals says, Wadewitz says, is that you look at the very beginning of this scenario. And they're saying that because the emergency response case begins at that point. The emergency
But they say neither affidavit discusses the seriousness of the assault. Now, one of the officers was there at the time Mr. Thomas left the campus. He could have said what was going on there because that's what he knew about. Isn't that right?
There were 2 to 3 officers on foot at the scene of the fight and breaking up the fight. Both officers, Stewart and Sergeant Williams, were in patrol cars and came to
the scene. Officer Stewart was at the campus, was he not?
They were very close to the campus. Sergeant Williams, University of Houston is right in Houston, I guess. They were around the campus area, very close to it, within radio contact of the officers. They were monitoring the whole situation as it was going on, and they were almost immediately on the scene. They weren't physically at the fight when it was going on, but they were monitoring it and at the scene.
Any other questions?
Yes, one more. Am I to understand your argument? Do you think that this writing by this CA requires every factor of the Wadewitz discussion to be discussed in an affidavit?
I do, Your Honor.
Well, what about the language on page 712? We believe the risk aspect of good faith may be established without reference to every consideration set forth in Wadewitz.
They said it, but they didn't do it. That language was in response to the dissent, which basically the last half of this opinion was in response to Justice Edelman's dissent. While they make that statement, if you look at where they actually ruled on the case, which is, well, I don't have the page number, but if you look at where they actually ruled, they go down each criteria. They lift that criteria directly from Wadewitz. I mean, and apply the facts of the affidavits to each of those suggested criteria in Wadewitz. Now, and they don't say anything when they do that about, well, this may apply or this may not apply. They say this applies. And when they go back and say that in response to the dissent, that's just not what they did in the opinion, Your Honor, and they can say it, but it's not what they did.
Well, then is your view that none of the Wadewitz factors should apply?
My position is that Wadewitz is suggested criteria for emergency response
only
analysis.
So it doesn't apply in police pursuit cases?
It may apply.
Right,
there
well,
may be...
Well, then, but you just indicated that if it goes to emergency responses, as opposed to police, what factors would you say should apply in this kind of a case if Wadewitz doesn't apply?
I'm not saying that any of these factors should apply. What I'm trying to say is that under a particular fact pattern, there may be situations where the considerations can overlap each other. But what I'm saying the Court of Appeals is doing, they're not saying, well, we recognize that some of these may apply in this situation, but not apply in this situation. They are taking verbatim, the suggested criteria in Wadewitz and using that as the test against my officer's affidavits. And, you know, under some cases, you might look at some of these and say, well, they can kind of fit in or not fit in. But the way they've done it here, it simply is not appropriate. Because, number one, they are starting from the beginning. They're saying we did not prove the need aspect because we did not show the seriousness of the assault. That's number one. They disregard all the other stuff our officers did show about the seriousness of the situation and the need that they had to intervene. But they focused on that one event, taking that from Wakens, and that is wrong. And
thank you, Counsel.
Okay, thank you.
And I definitely believe that the 14th Court of Appeals has set a standard so high that no police officer from this point on is going to be able to overcome it in order to get a summary judgment granted in his favor based on official immunity. And the affidavit that was filed by Deputy Ener in support of his motion for summary judgment listed over 18 different facts. These were not just conclusory statements. They were facts that he observed out there about 1 o'clock in the morning before he got involved in his chase.
What do you think the significance should be that he doesn't remember what happened after about a block before the intersection?
I think at the rate of speed he was going, that that's such a minuscule amount of time that it is completely irrelevant. His deposition is attached to the plaintiff's response. He talked about what he saw up until that time. He was going at a high rate of speed. A block away from that traffic light is a very short distance. It's a very short amount of time. And the two things I think he remembers that are important is that up until that time, he had no problems, and he saw the car that he was pursuing go through the intersection without any problems. I think that that's a big factor in his favor. And it was pointed out in his affidavit that he had a very short period of time to take in all this information, to make his decision as to what he was going to do. That's what he was faced with out there alone in his car that night.
Mr. Sanders, in what way has the standard by the Court of Appeals been set too high? Can you be specific?
Wade was clearly said, when it listed out all those factors, it said the court should determine factors such as. And I will agree with you that in Clark, the Court of Appeals did go back and make that statement. But in both of these opinions, although that statement was made in Clark, it appeared that they wanted every single one of those factors addressed in detail, or the officer just wasn't going to get a summary judgment. And in some situations where the officer is faced with a crime committed in his presence, has a very few seconds, if even that long, to make a decision as to what to do and how to do it, it's going to be impossible to set forth every single one of those factors.
In any other way, do you think that the Court of Appeals standard is set too high?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. There's two things that this court made clear in Chambers. Number one, in an official immunity or police pursuit case, mere negligence or even a statutory violation is not enough to impose liability. The standard is good faith. Well, I think what the 14th Court of Appeals has done is they have taken it and turned it around, and they have imposed such a burden on the officer that he has does not have to show good faith. What he has to do is negate any possible evidence or even argument of negligence on his part. That's the burden that they've imposed on him, and I believe they've absolutely
turned. Sorry, he has to negate
any evidence or any argument of evidence, I'm sorry, of negligence on his part. In other words, it's not enough for him just to put on evidence of good faith. He's got to absolutely and positively negate any type of negligence on his part. And that's a burden that I don't think any officer can overcome. Secondly, Chambers also made it clear that in an official immunity case, it's a very unique situation in the motion for summary judgment practice. It's the only time when there's a heightened burden on the non-movement. Chambers made it clear that in an official immunity case, the non-movement has a heightened burden to come forth with some kind of expert testimony that no reasonably prudent officer in a similar situation could have thought what the defendant officer did under these facts was reasonable. Well, that's not what happened in this case. Again, this is the second situation, the second time where the 14th Court of Appeals has turned the burden around and imposed it on the police officer. In my case, there was absolutely no affidavit from any type of officer, expert witness, anybody, filed in response to my motion for summary judgment. There was an affidavit from the plaintiff's attorney proving up the two exhibits, which were Ener's deposition and an accident report. That's it. There was no evidence that no reasonable officer could have thought what Ener did was reasonable.
I'm sorry, I got lost. You told us about the officer having to negate any evidence of negligence. What?
Right.
How does this relate to the proof requirement placed on the officer in this second piece that you're talking about?
I'm saying that there were two things that Chambers made it clear that was unique about these cases. Number one, mere negligence, statutory violation, not enough to impose liability. Have to negate good faith and show bad faith on the part of the officer. Secondly, it is the only situation where when a summary judgment is filed, there's a heightened burden of proof put on the non-movement. They have to come forth with an affidavit or some type of summary judgment evidence from an expert, police officer type expert, that no reasonable officer could have thought what this plaintiff or this defendant did was reasonable. In my case, there was no such evidence filed. There was no controverting affidavit. Therefore, it's my argument that even though Ener filed this very detailed affidavit full of facts that he observed and saw what was going on at the time, his opinion and what he did was reasonable, affidavits from two superior officers with many years' experience that what he did was reasonable. Summary judgment was denied in the face of that with no controverting affidavit.
Well, but this is not a circumstance. This is not then on the list of ways in which the Court of Appeals raised the standard. This is a complaint that the Court of Appeals misapplied Chambers in not holding the non-movement to the burden that Chambers said he or she should be held.
That's correct.
Right.
Both of those issues are raised in my brief.
Well, I understand, but I was trying to get your list of your problem with the law as the Court of Appeals stated it and applied it with respect to the standard being too high. And the two things you've mentioned are that they made the Wadowitz list mandatory.
Correct.
And the second thing was that they required the officer to negate any evidence of negligence. Is that all in terms
of... Well, those two things that you said go together. That's...
Okay.
That's the first part of it. The second part of it, I believe that in denying the summary judgment in the face of the three affidavits that Ener filed, saying good faith, when there was no controverting affidavit, that's the second way they turned the Chambers around and put an unfair burden on the police officer.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kevin.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert Lathan and Mr. Levon Hovnatanian will present argument for the respondent. Mr. Lathan will open with the first 10 minutes.
May it please the court, I am Bobby Lathan, and along with Mr. Ronald Wardell, we represent the respondent in the Ener case. Our facts are identical, but for the fact that the county has raised against Mr. Wardell's client a timing issue with regard to the response of his summary judgment. Mr. Wardell adequately demonstrated to this court in his brief that he did, in fact, timely file his response because it was filed 13 days before the hearing. And, but for that issue, which Mr. Wardell adequately settled in his brief, our facts are identical. I'd like to go right back, Justice Hankinson, if I may, right to your issues, because I think what my friend Mr. Sanders is trying to suggest to this court is that simply by applying the Wadowitz factors, the Court of Appeals is somehow raising the bar, and that is absolutely incorrect. The Court of Appeals is not raising the bar. The Court of Appeals is doing the right thing below in our two cases by applying the Wadowitz factors. As I think, Justice Enoch, as you may have pointed out, these are achievable goals. An affidavit can, in fact, be filed, which addresses each of the Wadowitz factors. It wasn't done in this case, in either of the two cases, and because the affidavits were legally insufficient, and because we are in a summary judgment context, these officers are not entitled to summary judgment on the issue of good faith.
Well, what's missing out of the affidavits?
Well, Your Honor, what the Court of Appeals says is missing, which is accurate, is an assessment by the officer who was there with personal knowledge. In our case, that would be Deputy Ener, of specific aspects. Let's start with the risk, because that's the easiest one. And you rightly pointed out that
it says, at the time I believe the speeder was acting recklessly and was a danger and I should definitely apprehend him.
And he does address the question with regard to what possible risk might the speeder have posed. But what Wedderwood says is you have to look at the circumstances and say what risk not is the bad guy throwing upon the public, but what risk might the officer vest upon the public by undertaking this pursuit. And that is exactly what is never discussed in Mr. Ener, Deputy Ener's affidavit. What on the affidavits that have passed muster since Wedderwood, those affidavits specifically state, I viewed the circumstances, I saw the opposing traffic coming. Of course, in this situation, Deputy Ener can't say a word about the opposing traffic because when I deposed him, and that's why so much of his deposition testimony is attached, he says, truth of the matter is, after I executed my U-turn and started heading back to this intersection, my memory fades to black, and I can't tell you anything. Of course, come affidavit time, he's got a little better memory, but he doesn't say a word about the approaching traffic.
In the other case, they do talk about approaching traffic and how much was out there, and it was a commercial area, not much traffic, it was 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Why doesn't that meet the Waterway Standard?
Well, and I have not studied the specifically of the Clark case, and I'd leave that to Mr. Hovind-Panian to address specifically what's missing there. But I will tell you that what I believe what this court says in Wedderwood is you have to assess the risk on a moment-by-moment basis. And when in this situation Deputy Ener makes a decision that he is just going to bust through that red light without slowing down, and I believe, and I could be getting my cases confused, and maybe in the other case there was some discussion of slowing down and looking at the oncoming traffic and attempting to be more reasonable. I can only address the facts in my case. In my case, he just hits the gas and heads right through that red light.
The whole thing was 3 or 4 blocks?
It was about 2 to 3 blocks, Your Honor. That's correct.
So, I mean, we're just talking about a few seconds between his U-turn and the red light.
5 to 10 seconds, I think, is reasonable. But he had the opportunity to address that. And it's because he didn't address it, because we're in the summary judgment context, because, and let us not forget, that even in these cases, reasonable inferences are to be applied in the non-movement's favor, etc. Because it's not there, the Court of Appeals was absolutely right. There's no raising of the bar. The Court of Appeals simply said, you didn't hit the thing.
Let me ask you about Wedderwood's. The dispute among the justices in Wedderwood's was about the timing of the assessment of the risk. But for the standard of could a reasonable officer have done what this officer done or decided to do, if you assess the risk at each moment in time, as Wedderwood says you do, what is different about that than ordinary negligence? If Wedderwood is what applies, why isn't that simply a negligence standard, because the officer is asked to evaluate whether or not to proceed through that intersection based on the circumstances of the intersection, and if he does so when he should have not done so, how is that not just sort of a kind of maybe making it a reasonable doubt that's got to be proven as opposed to really a good faith deal?
It is a compelling and an appropriate question. My answer to you is twofold. It is not a negligence standard. Good faith is a heightened standard. You've got to do more to show good faith than to show negligence.
So it's like it's got to be sort of clear and convincing evidence.
I'm not talking about in terms of the quantity of proof, Your Honor. I'm talking about specifically what you look at. You do get the negligence as was not done in this case, if they had presented legally sufficient affidavits. Then you get to the question of, all right, now do we have a fact issue on the reasonableness, what the officer could have believed? That analysis, the negligence standard, comes into play after they've crossed the good faith finish line. They never got there in this case. So part of my answer to you is, I'm not pretending negligence doesn't exist. That analysis comes into play once they've joined the issue, once they've said, all right, we've now made our good faith test. Now, you, the non-movement, must now come forward, and this is where Mr. Sanders is talking about this controverting affidavit. That doesn't come into play. Note, this court has never said there's a requirement to present an iota of evidence until after they cross the good faith finish line. So part of my answer is, you get the negligence when, if they cross the good faith finish line and they've met the Wedderwood test, then we've got to come forward on the other side and say, now I'll show you where there's a fact issue on what the officer could have believed.
I'm still not clear what's missing. He says it was between 12:30 and 1, traffic was light, no pedestrians or people nearby, no open businesses except for a gas station, no residences with any activity, Water was clear and dry, visibility was good, road was dry in good condition, and I knew from past experience the traffic would be locked.
Okay, exactly what's missing.
What else could he say about
it? Four key factors in Wadewitz are missing.
Okay.
Two from the need, two from the risk plank. On the need plank, the first thing that's missing is no discussion whatsoever of the seriousness of the crime to which elevates to a need the reason to go after this person. All he says is we've got a speeder. There is no indication, as has been the case in other cases, that have applied Wadewitz, that there was any danger posed by this person other than the speed. He doesn't address, he doesn't say that.
What else should he say?
Well, I think he can talk about whether there was anything that was going on other than the speed. There is no, all he's saying here is that I've got somebody now that is speeding.
71 and a 55 mile an hour.
That's correct.
Why isn't that enough?
Well, in the totality of circumstances, that's not enough, because then you say, okay, there's a need. We want to get speeders. I understand that. All right, so let's park that there and say, all right, let's talk about the need. Now let's talk about, is my presence necessary? And this is the second aspect of the need plank. Is my, the officer's presence necessary to prevent, and this is the language of Wadewitz, the loss of life or serious injury? Now, you might make the jump and say, somebody who's going 71 in a 55 zone, there is a threat to life, and injury, etc. No discussion of that whatsoever in the affidavit on Deputy Ingram's part. So the best he can do on the need plank is to simply say, I've got a speeder.
So you've got, so these troopers that go up and down I-35 and turn on their red lights and go about 80 trying to catch somebody who's doing an 80 and there's an accident, they just can't meet the Wadewitz standard.
No,
because
Your Honor,
they'd never be able to establish that that speeder posed a serious danger to other people.
I don't think that's it. On speeding alone, if the question is that enough to meet the need test, it might be. I'm not suggesting that this court ought to say speeding alone is never enough. Even in the absence of swerving or drunkenness or whatever, weaving, you know, all the other factors that might come into play that don't exist in our case, because we've got a lone guy staying in his lane, as far as everyone knows, and speeding. So I'm not suggesting this court ought to say speeding alone doesn't get to the need, but that's where this court in favor says you've got to balance. Is there a risk out there that if I'm going to go bust that red light without slowing down and going through that intersection without even attempting to look at who might be coming from the perpendicular side, is there a risk that somebody might get hurt? And the answer is yes. And then you balance that risk versus the need. And that's why
that's simply a conclusion that's drawn from the facts stated in the affidavit, and it's up to the experts to dispute that. I mean, if I say, here's a speeder, traffic was light, I engaged in a chase, and you say, well, what's missing is the conclusion that was what a reasonable officer would do?
No, Your Honor. What's missing is the second half of the balancing test, where he's then supposed to say, and as I make the decision to go pursue that speeder, take the lead. I think maybe he's going to hurt somebody. Maybe he's going to kill somebody. As I make that decision, I now have to assess what risk am I posing by my actions. If I'm going to decide to go run that red light without slowing down, without looking, without perceiving who else is out there, that's what is entirely absent from these affidavits. Number one, because he says his memory goes black. But number two, he doesn't assess it. And that's what the Court of Appeals found was so wanting in this case.
If he said, I assessed it and I went for it, that'd be sufficient.
Well, he's got to get facts. He cannot conclude that he assessed it. And that's also a problem that they've got in this case. He must say, I saw a X number of cars in this direction, traffic condition in this direction was going, I perceived their speed, I felt I could make it, I didn't need to slow down. I am evaluating the facts of the circumstances. But otherwise, we're just giving these officers, no pun intended, the green light.
Well, what are the two facts on the risk side that you say are missing from the affidavit?
One is...
They gave us the two needs. Give us the two risks.
Correct, Your Honor. The two factors on the risk plank are, number one, what alternatives were available to apprehend the speeder? Wadewitz said you've got to have some discussion of that. In this situation, he could have talked about rodeoing to another unit, you know, trying to get somebody else up there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So factor number one is that was never discussed. What were the alternatives? Fact number two is, what's the likelihood that I, the officer, am going to harm somebody else? Not the likelihood that the speeder's going to harm somebody else, but that I and my decision. Those are the two factors.
Thank you.
Do you think he cannot get a summary judgment because his memory goes to black a block away?
In this case, that's exactly what I think, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I want to begin by addressing the Attorney General's argument on the perceived conflict between Wadowitz and Chambers. There is no conflict, as several other intermediate appellate courts in the state have noted, and we don't need another test, since the test that this court set out in Chambers and then added specificity and detail to in Wadowitz applies to both an emergency response case and the police pursuit case. First, it's worth noting that the 14th court in Clark, the 14th court majority, and the first court majority in the Chapa case both said that this court in Wadowitz came along and clarified the summary judgment burden in good faith and immunity cases that this court had set out in Chambers. A reading of those two cases shows that the 14th court and the first court were correct. There's no altering of the test. They're,
assuming that true, what's missing in these affidavits?
Your Honor, there are several things missing in these affidavits. I'll address the risk aspect first, or rather the need aspect first. What's missing in the affidavit of both these officers, and I'll address Mr. Simpson's affidavit later, is something that shows, as this court said in Wadowitz, the urgency of the circumstances requiring intervention. In other words,
why is it driving 90 miles an hour at whatever it was, a 35-mile-an-hour zone at 2 o'clock in the morning? Why isn't that some urgency?
Your Honor, that would be some urgency, but what the officers focused on was the urgency to apprehend Mr. Thomas all the way back from the beginning, when they first were talking to him in his Jeep after the fight. That would present some urgency. There's no question about that, going 90 miles an hour on the University of Houston campus. But one thing that they left out was discussing, for instance, what other alternatives are available. For instance, why could they have not continued to radio for help instead of pursuing Mr. Thomas 90 miles an hour through the University of Houston campus?
Well, now, because you're never going to catch him. I mean, it seems to me that's rather obvious.
Well, Your Honor, but that's...
Well, he's going to radio for the help to come. He's going 90 miles an hour and you're sitting there.
Your Honor, that could very well be true, but that gets into the balancing test as this court characterized it in Chambers and Wadowitz. There is the possibility that Mr. Thomas would escape. There's no question about that. He is going 90 miles an hour. But at that point, which end of the scale is the lowest? Is the risk to the other drivers on the road from speeding vehicles going through intersections at 90 miles an hour, is that more important, or is it more important to apprehend Mr. Thomas? Now, if Mr. Thomas was Mr. Dahlman, if he was a murderer, if he had committed any kind of a serious crime and jetted away from the circumstances, then one could easily say this is a pretty close case. Perhaps the need to apprehend him immediately did indeed outweigh the risk to the public.
Let me ask you a question, though. And I'm a police officer. I'm a trooper out on I-35, and a speeder goes zipping right past me. The freeway is basically clear, so I engage in a chase, and there's an accident. And my affidavit says I had a speeder going zipping right by me. My job is traffic control. I'm supposed to slow him down. Traffic was light. I assess the situation. I engage in the chase. Is that sufficient?
Your Honor, it might be, if it also addresses not only the need, but the, well
that's all I'm saying.
That's all I'm saying.
Your Honor, that's my affidavit.
Then in that case, I would respectfully submit that no, that is not sufficient.
What is missing?
Well, Your Honor, any kind of detailed presentation of the factors that this court set out.
Okay, do I have to, in my affidavit, do I have to say my job is to control traffic because it poses a serious risk of injury to others on the highway?
No, Your Honor.
Or do I have to say that traffic was light, therefore I didn't feel I was posing a serious risk to the highway? I mean, do I have to give the basis of my assessment in my affidavit to make it complete?
Yes, Your Honor, you have to give the basis of your assessment, correct.
I'm not talking about facts. I'm just talking about I considered he was speeding. I considered it flight traffic, so I went forward. You say that's not enough.
Well, I think, but Your Honor, I think it does leave out the basis of his assessment. Or if you want to characterize that as more facts, yes, I believe more facts would be necessary. For one thing, in Your Honor's hypothetical, that particular officer is not discussing what the alternatives to a high-speed pursuit on an interstate, even at 2 o'clock in the morning, what the alternatives to that would be. For instance, as we contend should have happened in this case, radioing for help and not intending to track somebody.
It seems to me that goes to creating a fact issue as to whether a reasonable officer could have done this. It seems to me that goes to whether or not there's a fact issue. But we're not talking about opposing expert out there saying, well, I see what he said he assessed, and just reasonable officer can't do that. You're just arguing that I just don't agree. I don't agree that that's I personally, having looked at that affidavit, don't agree that that's a reasonable assessment.
Well, Your Honor, actually, I'm arguing both. There is an expert's affidavit in this case, and in fact, this addresses a question that you asked earlier. What else could they have shown in this case? They should have, that they could have, and they should have, shown by affidavit an expert opinion that is more than conclusive. All that Mr. Simba's affidavit does in this case, and it's literally less than a page long, he spends about 6 lines discussing his qualifications. Well, and there's no doubt he's qualified. He spends another 4 lines saying what he reviewed in this case. And again, there's no dispute that he reviewed the materials in this case. And then he simply says, I believe that the officers complied with state law and University of Houston police policy when they followed Mr. Thomas' vehicle on February 9th. In light of all the facts, which he does not set out, I believe the need to apprehend Linda Thomas, Kevin Thomas, I've been an appellate lawyer perhaps one day too long, not Linda Thomas, but Kevin Thomas, outweighed the risk of harm to the public, and that any reasonably prudent police officer could have made the decision that the need to apprehend the suspect outweighed the risk of harm to the public in continuing the pursuit. All that shows is that Mr. Simba, or somebody in the Attorney General's office who prepared the affidavit, read Chambers. That's as conclusory can get.
I'm a little confused. The reason why we would want all these details in the affidavit is so the trial court can decide whether or not, as a matter of law, this chase was justified.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it seems to me I hear... Well, if they're going real fast, if the suspect's going real fast and you've got to chase them, then that poses a great danger. I mean, you got 2 cars going fast on the road instead of 1, and maybe the chase is going to go on longer once the suspect sees they're being chased, so that's danger. And then on the other hand, if they're not going very fast, like 15 miles over the speed limit, chasing is, there's not that big a harm. I mean, not that much bad has been done. So the increased risk by pursuing the chase doesn't make it worth it. And sitting here as a judge, and I presume any judge from a trial judge on up to our court has to decide, if we get this complete affidavit, if we ever get an affidavit that has every Wadowitz factor in it, which way does all this cut, and do we have any standards on that?
Your Honor,
I'm hearing if they're going fast, you shouldn't go after them, and if they're not going fast, you shouldn't go after them.
Your Honor, and I can answer your question, and the answer may seem simplistic, but it's actually this court's answer for Chambers and later in Wadowitz, and that is it's a case-by-case determination. I would grant this court that if we had affidavits in this case that satisfied, or not that satisfied, that discussed all the Chambers and the Wadowitz factors, then we probably wouldn't be here today. We probably never even would have been in the 14th Court of Appeals. Because
so all that's lacking in either one of these cases is just longer affidavits.
Your Honor, boy, I hate to nail myself down to that position. That's certainly one thing that's lacking. But it's not just the length, it's why they would be longer. And the reason they would be longer is because they would adhere to the requirements of specificity and detail that this court said you must adhere to in Chambers and Wadowitz. And Your Honor, and I'll further answer your question with an analogy. Justice Edelman, in his dissent, says, but there are certain factors that are inherent in every police pursuit, in every emergency response case. And it would not make sense to require the officers to set out those factors in every affidavit, in every case, because we all know what those factors are. because they're inherent in every such case. Well, as a matter of common sense, certainly, you know, three or four laymen standing around could tell you from watching court TV what factors are present in every emergency response case, what factors and what risks are present in every police pursuit case. But this court in Chambers and Wadowitz said, you must discuss them. They're part of our good faith immunity test. You can't assume them. If certain factors weigh one way, well, then you say so. If certain factors weigh against that way, against the first way, well, then you say so. But it's not, if the court wants to adhere to a workable standard for trial courts, it shouldn't require a trial court to think, well, you know, this affidavit sets out one out of five factors, but maybe the other four are just inherent in this case. That is not enough to get a summary judgment on immunity. Furthermore, the other improper thing about that is that it shifts the burden of proof. It shifts the burden of proof impermissibly from the movement to the non-movement, for the non-movement to come in and say, well, I know that the officers didn't address those factors, but here's why they weren't present in this case. Well, that's exactly backwards. Before we get to that stage, the movement has to come in and affirmatively discuss those factors and show why they were present. And that's why we think that the Attorney General's office, Mr. Keister, in a very well-written brief, depends too much on Justice Edelman's dissent. That's not a workable standard, and it does violate Chambers and Wadowitz. Even if this court finds that there's a conflict between those two opinions, or that the test requires even more detail and more specificity, those affidavits still wouldn't pass muster under any test.
So, let me, I mean, I want to be clear about this. What is missing in these affidavits is some sort of analysis of the facts that are set out, particularly in the University of Houston and Clark case. They say light traffic, they say speeder, they say assault, and what's missing is some analysis in the affidavits about the mental process of the police officer in determining whether or not to give chase.
Oh no, Your Honor. I don't want to look into the mental process of the police officer. What I'm saying is there are more factors that this court commanded in Chambers and Wadowitz that must be discussed that weren't discussed. Now that may well change the analysis, but we'll never know unless the officers discuss those factors.
Okay. Then you're saying it's the severity of the assault. You're saying there's a fact observation that's not in the affidavit?
I'm saying there are several, Your Honor, and that is one of them, the severity of the assault. We know, well, that's the irony. Okay. We don't know. We don't know what happened. For all we know, Mr. Thomas, who appeared to be the loser in the fight, by the way, since he was beaten and bloodied, the officers attempted to detain him. Now, he did the wrong thing. There's no question about it. When an officer tells you, stay put, you must stay put. Your Honor, and I see I'm out of time. May I finish
Go ahead.
Thank you. He did the wrong thing. I'm not here to defend Kevin Thomas's actions. But unless there is some indication to the officers that this man has committed a serious offense that would require us to hold him and proceed perhaps, you know, down the road of the criminal process and conduct a criminal investigation and get a statement from him and things like that, then there's no need to be zooming after him 90 miles an hour on the University of Houston campus. The facts in this case only show, and the officers only knew, that Mr. Thomas got beat up, not that...
It's fine.
Thank
you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Captain.
Your Honors, Chambers set the standard for official immunity in 1994. In all the cases that we're dealing with, there are several hundred cases now, have attempted to interpret how to apply Chambers. In those cases are everything from negligent arrest to in some cases slip and fall cases. There are There are all kinds of cases out there that are struggling to interpret Chambers. Waitwitz, in my opinion, attempted to interpret or did interpret Chambers in one specific fact pattern, an emergency response scenario, period. The Court of Appeals, and now several courts of appeals, have taken that criteria for that specific fact pattern and said, we're going to look at these issues, these items, and we're going to see whether or not they've been proven. And if each one of those haven't, we're going to find that sovereign or official immunity has not been proven. Good faith has not been proven. Chambers said that the officer must prove that the need to apprehend outweighed a clear risk of harm in continuing the pursuit. There's only one risk of harm in this pursuit that I can see, or in any pursuit, and that clear risk of harm is that either the person being pursued or that the police officer is somehow going to be involved in an accident. That is the clear risk of harm in a pursuit, and I cannot think of another. Why does a police officer, as in the Clark case, why could they not go through a detailed factual analysis of all this, of what they did, of why they felt the person needed to be detained? And I do not see how you can argue that this person should not have been apprehended. When you start from the fight on campus to the assault of the police officer, to fleeing the police, and to traveling 90 miles an hour, that person needed to be stopped. Why does the police officer have to say, now taking all that into consideration, that is why I felt he needed to be stopped? Why is it not sufficient for him just to say, look, these are the reasons. This is being presented to a trial court. And the trial court can look at that evidence and say, does that evidence meet the standard? Why does the affidavit have to say to the trial court, in and of itself, judge, that what the standard is? Justice Cornyn, in the Chambers opinion in footnote 7, compared it to the abuse of discretion standard that an appellate court would look at, and said an abuse of discretion is shown only if the trial court could not reasonably have reached the decision in question. Can you look at these affidavits of Officer Stewart or Officer Williams? And looking at the totality of those affidavits, say that those officers did not make a reasonable decision or could not have made a reasonable decision. Yes, somebody else may disagree with them, but the totality of those facts show that they met the standard. And the trial court is going to be educated on what the standard is. And in this case, Your Honors, the only evidence was from those two officers. There was an affidavit submitted by the expert for the plaintiffs in this case, but that affidavit in no way challenged any factual recitation. All that affidavit did was said, I find that another reasonable officer may not have acted as these officers did. It did not say that they were wrong in beginning to pursue. It did not say, well, you shouldn't pursue somebody going 90 miles an hour. It just simply said, I find that they should not have done this. Our position is that when you have those type of affidavits that clearly meet the standard in Chambers, that should be sufficient. Waitwitz is limited to a specific situation. Well, I'm saying I'm out of time, Your Honor, but Waitwitz is limited to a specific situation and should not be applied in a pursuit scenario.
Any other questions? Thank you, Your Honor. That concludes the argument and the two consolidated cases, and the court will take another brief recess.
Yeah, I guess we'll be right.